Mark Pesce, you all know Mark Pesce. He is first and foremost a futurist. He's an inventor. If you guys know anything about VRML, if you remember VRML, do you remember VRML? Hey, you're looking at the man who made that happen. He's a panelist on the New Inventors. He's an author, he's a published author. He's actually written books on Microsoft Direct Show and some of the early DirectX stuff. Mark, as a futurist, looks at the now and tries to envision what's happening in the future by connecting it to the now. I'm not going to take up any of his time. Mark Pesce, come up, dude.
Alrighty, folks. Let's start off with a message from the future.
The local news of the week. At midnight Saturday, the telephones in this city will be changed to dial service, and all telephone numbers will be changed. Late this week, new directories will be delivered. Here are a few important suggestions for the use of your dial telephone. Before calling any number, first secure the number from your new directory. Then remove the receiver and listen for the dial tone. It sounds like this. That tone indicates everything is ready for your call. With the receiver off the hook, dial the desired number. For example, suppose you want to dial 23650. Dial each numeral in this manner, pulling the dial around to the finger stop each time. Be sure to allow the dial to freely return to its normal position. And this is the ringing signal. If the line is busy, you'll hear this busy signal. Until Saturday midnight, please use your present directory and make your calls in the usual manner.
Good morning, everyone. So today I'm really going to talk about how the way we're dialing each other up has been changing so massively and so quickly and so completely. And so let me start off by talking about what happened last Monday. So as you know, at 2:28 p.m. of Chinese local time, there was a massive earthquake. And in places, the ground trembled for as long as 3 minutes, and it was felt all over Asia, and in particular, it was felt all over China. Now, the Chinese, in March of this year, passed the Americans with the largest online population. There's over 220 million Chinese who are online, basically, on a daily basis. And so when the shaking had stopped, if they still had power and they still had an internet connection, they went online, basically, to ask people, did you feel that? Did you feel that? Did you feel that? Because, of course, that's the completely normal reaction when that happens. Now, we all do all sorts of things online. We do some very prosaic things. So we go online and maybe check the banking or make a flight reservation. We do things for our coworkers. We answer their queries. We ask them questions. We help them do reports. And the interesting thing is that we're also using the internet to extend and to deepen our social life. Now, it wasn't supposed to be like that. This is what the internet was supposed to turn us into. Basically, the equivalent of a nerdy uni dropout who's lying around in the parents' basement and abandoning contact with the cruel world. And in reality, something very, very different is taking place because we're reaching out through the wire and we're connecting. We're connecting first to our families and then to our friends and then to our colleagues. And just now, we're starting to connect and actually establish relationships with people that we've never met and probably will never meet. And we touch all of these people with acts of communication. With our friends, we can send them, you know, a favorite joke. With our family, we send them loves and kisses. And with our colleagues, we might send them a link to a report. Now, what are we doing with everyone else? Well, we'll come to that. But every time we reach out, every time we connect, every time we communicate, we actually strengthen the bond between each of us. And that's not a new thing. It's not even a particularly human thing, because gorillas and chimpanzees do it as well. And it's a basic part of our biology, and it's something that we know how to do from basically the moment we're born. We've known how to do it for 11 million years. And what we do is we use these moments of connection to share something that we stumbled upon, or something that we found that's really interesting, or something that we really believe. Sharing makes the world go round, but all of a sudden, we've gotten really, really good at sharing. So, you consider this. I've been in Australia for just over 4.5 years. And all of these new things have happened since I've been here. You have YouTube now, which allows you to share a video with absolutely everyone else on the planet. You have Flickr, which allows you to do the same thing with photos. And now, just now, you have Twitter. Now, how many of you use Twitter? Huh? You're doing better than Sydney, all right? But this is still only about 10 or 15% of the room. The rest of you, this is your warning call. It's time to sign up for Twitter. All right, so what's Twitter? Twitter is a social message service. All right, I sign up for Twitter and I have a number of people who then decide that they want to get any messages that I post. The messages are 140 characters long. Now, when I actually did this in Sydney, I had about 450 followers. As of this morning, I have about 525 followers, in part because I've been pimping Twitter a lot in public. So, many of these people who follow me and whom I follow in return, they're known to me either in the flesh or they're known to me by reputation. But other people follow me just because they may be interested in something that I have to say. Now, I have to admit, a lot of the chatter on Twitter is completely inane. It's like the world's sort of weirdest cocktail party that never shuts down because it's global, all right? But some of what they have to say is incredibly vital and incredibly important. For example, I have a fellow who follows me and whom I follow named Dedrick Lam. Dedrick lives in Shanghai. And on last Monday, when the shaking stopped, well, he's like, I think we just had an earthquake. He goes on Twitter and he starts to talk around. Other people in Shanghai says, yeah, I felt that. Other people in Beijing say, yeah, I felt that. And all of a sudden, it's pretty clear that there's been an earthquake that was felt all around China, but no one's heard anything from Sichuan, and there are Twitterers in Sichuan. Sichuan has gone dark. So already, within a minute or two of the shaking stopping, the Twitterers have a really, really good idea of what's happened and where it's happened. And this means that Twitter is now functioning as a human-based early warning system, because we're connected together by so many different ways that when part of that human network drops out, we can sense it immediately. And this was known on Twitter, and I actually checked this before I left the house last Monday night. There was all this stuff about it. I couldn't find anything on the BBC or CNN or anywhere else or New York Times online because it hadn't been reported. It hadn't hit the AP wire. But the Twittersphere already knew about it. I went out that evening to some of my friends who have toured China, who know China well. I said, have you heard about the Chinese earthquake? They said, what earthquake? They hadn't actually heard about it yet. Now, by the time I got back to my flat a couple of hours later on Monday evening, the Twittersphere was completely alive with all this chatter, much of it coming from China, about what was going on. And people were now forwarding links through Twitter. They were sending newspaper articles. They were sending videos. They were sending photos from the front line of the rescue effort. And on Tuesday, Dedrick Lam essentially became a one-man clearinghouse and posted link after link after link. And essentially what happened was it was easier in the first 24 to 48 hours to find out what was going on in China via Twitter, because you just needed one person in one place with one link to get into the human network, and then it would go wide everywhere. And so for that first 48 hours, as BBC and CNN and the New York Times are trying to get reporters into a place where you couldn't get anyone because all the bridges had collapsed, there was no way. You actually had a really good sense of what was going on everywhere. You got a sense of the ground truth. And so you got these amazing stories, and then you got some stories that tore your heart. Now, if you're sensitive, I want you to turn away from this photo, because this photo is a very, very sad photo. But again, it all came through, and so you got the complete picture of what was going on in China. All right, you can look back at the screen now. So our ability to touch or to be touched by someone else in matters either very trivial or in life and death have grown so completely and so quickly and so suddenly that we're now not just connected, we're hyper-connected, because it's coming in from everywhere, and it's coming in and going broad from a single individual to the entire planet nearly instantaneously. So the social message service, Twitter, and things like Twitter, and there will be a lot of things like Twitter, they're not just a fun way to while away the time. They're a great way to stay informed, but they're also the way we're going to be doing business in the 21st century. So, let's take a look at how that plays out. All right, so the first weekend of April, this gentleman, Michael Arrington, who runs a blog called TechCrunch, which is probably read by a number of people in this audience, he was at home, and he had his internet provider, which is Comcast, he gets a cable modem, it went out, and he kept on calling Comcast to find out what was going on, and every time he called Comcast, they said, oh yes, we're aware of the outage, and then they would give him a different reason why the outage had happened. And after 30 hours, he'd had enough, and so he snuck onto his neighbor's Wi-Fi, and he sent out a tweet. You can read it at the top of the list. He'd had enough. Now, Michael Arrington has 17,000 followers on Twitter. And they're probably people who read TechCrunch. They're people who are going to be very plugged into what's going on in technology. So Arrington posts this to Twitter in his complete sort of exasperation. And 20 minutes later, his phone rings. And it's an account executive from Comcast saying, "Hi, we've heard about your problem. How can we get this fixed?" And in the course of that conversation, Arrington learns that, in fact, this Comcast dude sits there and reads the stream of Twitters and filters it against people mentioning Comcast so he can nip problems in the bud. Now, although Arrington is big and powerful, you don't have to be big and powerful for this to happen. Josh Lowenson, a nobody, a self-professed internet nobody, was having a problem installing some software that came along with his Comcast cable modem, and again got upset and tweeted about it, and again, 20 minutes later, gets a call from Comcast, problem solved. And then he writes essentially this long and loving blog post about what is considered to be America's number one hated company, because it's America's biggest cable company, and Americans have a very, very contentious relationship with the cable company, all right? You can't pay for this kind of PR. This kind of PR is gold. And yet it's coming from a member of the community because someone was listening at the right place at the right time to help someone with their grievance, all right? This makes Twitter and all these social networking services extremely powerful and extremely potent weapons. But a weapon can be turned two ways. Now, this is my friend Gregory. And Gregory is a consultant to the United States. Now, you know the truth of consultants because I do a bit of consulting work. Often you hire a consultant when you want to tell the managing director something and you don't want it to come out of your own mouth because you don't have the cojones for it. All right? I know this because I talk to managing directors, I talk to vice chancellors, and I tell them what's going on. Their staff knows what's going on, but someone's got to break the news. Well, and we also know that there are some managing directors who like to shoot the messenger, which is why I get hired, because if you shoot me, I go away. It doesn't matter. But that's what happened to Gregory last week. You know, he had a successful presentation to this managing director of this small internet company. And then the managing director basically went bananas and peppered him with insults and accusations. You're trying to steal money from a company. This stuff is all crap. What are you talking about? And he actually sent a tweet out saying, "My God, that went really bad. I can't believe she acted this way. This is just unbelievable." And I got that tweet because I'm one of Gregory's 9 followers. And I followed up with it and I got the whole story. And when I heard about this woman's bad behavior, I had a real penny drop moment because Gregory just got onto Twitter. He wasn't using it very much, but two of the people he's connected to, myself and Raven Zachary, have a lot of followers. That's just 100 of my followers and how they're connected together. Raven has about 700 followers and they're connected together. And I realized both Raven and I are well-known people. We're trusted in technology circles because we tend to give people good advice. And we realized that if we worked our own hyperconnections, we could bring that company to its knees. Just with a word. All we had to do was to tell people in our technology circles how this person has behaved. And do you think that managing director would be able to hire a qualified technology person again? All right? I realized that I had the power in my hands to trigger the nuclear option. That the MD would pay the full price for her stupidity. All I had to do was say a word and it would all be over in a few minutes. And I'm calling that instant karma. Now, all of this means that we need new tools. We need new tools that you folks have to create because we're going to need them to be able to read the collective mind of the internet so you folks can find out in real time what's going on, what's being said, and why it's being said. Everyone needs this, but the big commercial firms need this the most of all because customers can now organize themselves against you at the press of a button, all right? Rumors can destroy markets inside of an afternoon, and bad behavior can no longer be covered up. Now, that's more than just a warning call because this is an opportunity. The techniques of social sharing that we're all using when we leave the cubicle farm, those are the technologies we actually need to bring into the corporation. If you're lucky at work, you have email. And if you're very lucky, you have instant messaging. But give the corporate employees a social messaging tool, something that they'll just sort of waste their time with, something that they can use to collectively gripe or collaborate. That's beyond the pale. That's too much freedom. In fact, that gives the employees too much ability to self-organize against corporate stupidity. As if sharing and as if building esprit de corps were really a waste of time. Well, there's a disconnect between what's going on in our lives and the lives that we're living inside of our companies. And right now, inside of the corporate cubicle, we're immune from the fact that outside those doors, things are changing so rapidly it's making us dizzy. But down on the cube farm, things are pretty much the same as they ever were. Now, the longer that goes on, the more dangerous it becomes, because the more disconnected the life inside of the organization becomes from the actual hyper-connected, hyper-communicating world that we're becoming. And that's a danger, because you stand to lose time, you stand to lose customers, you stand to lose connection with your audience. But if you build tools that allow for that sharing, you can give everyone in that organization the same ability to communicate, and you can build the collaborative abilities of your organization, all right? You can turbocharge your organization in that way. So, but you, to do this, you have to grasp the net up. Now, let's take a look at how. Okay, so the web is more than just words on a page, and it's more than just a funny video embedded in a website. The web is not about content. I know we were all taught that content is king. Content is not king. Connection is king. Now, 12 years ago, sharing meant a cute page with an animated GIF background and a really, really bad MIDI soundtrack and 4,000 digital snaps of your kitty cat. All right, you remember it, I remember it. And that still goes on today. But it's become a sideshow. It's not the main event. Sharing has evolved into something else. It's more than just a way to unburden yourself. So, in 2001, Jimmy Wales opened up his failed encyclopedia to all contributors. And he had no idea that for the next 2 years, about 500 to 2,000 people from time to time would contribute on every single topic that they could think of. And they would correct grammatical and spelling mistakes in each other's entries, and they would borrow from the 1913 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which had fallen out of copyright, but they lacked the expert knowledge to write an article themselves. Now, when I saw Wikipedia first, which was in January of 2002, it had only about 14,000 articles. And that's not bad, but that's really about the same size as a children's encyclopedia. It's not really enough. But that represented a year of basically thankless work for the Wikipedians. But somehow, even that was enough to spread the word about Wikipedia. People dropped by Wikipedia and used it, and maybe developed a relationship that was a positive experience because they actually got something they needed, and they'd be more likely to drop by again, and maybe that next time they might change a word or change some punctuation or maybe add a sentence or add a paragraph, and then maybe they'd be braver the next time and add a full paragraph and then add an article. And all the time, every time they had a satisfying experience, they used the social sharing networks of email and the web to tell their friends about it. So Wikipedia grows and grows and grows until today it has 2,300,000 articles in the English language, all right? In just half a decade, Wikipedia has become the definitive reference in the English language. Now, Wikipedia is not perfect, but neither is Britannica, all right? They're about equally accurate. But Wikipedia is available anytime through any connection on the internet. And in Wikipedia, we have the standard reference now for everyone who reads English. What's that given us? Well, if you're a student, it's given you a way to cheat on your papers because your teacher's telling you not to use Wikipedia, but we know that the kids are all using Wikipedia. Or you can settle a trivia dispute at dinner. But if you're smart, you use the factual information in Wikipedia to make better decisions, all right? We have such a wealth of knowledge available to us now that we should think of Wikipedia as a bit of a brain that just sits right outside of our heads. If we used it constantly and consistently as a reference, we would make better decisions, because there's an old quote from Mark Twain, it's not what you don't know, it's what you know that ain't so. So for all the factual questions of our lives, we now have the answers. We simply need to put that knowledge to work. And if we leverage the knowledge and the expertise that's securely locked away in our heads, knowledge that we're now able to share with one another, we can increase our intelligence. We can consistently make better decisions. We can improve our effectiveness by making better decisions, both as individuals
as groups.
And this basic innovation, this is the most important innovation of the 21st century, all right? It has enormous implications for organizations of all sorts. Organizations thrive on information, and they thrive on knowledge. Every trade, from the most physical trade to the most abstract, relies on the expertise of those who practice it. So we apprentice young people so they can grow into a trade. We send them to uni and to graduate studies. But we can now accelerate that transfer of knowledge with the technologies of sharing. Now, sometimes text is the best medium for sharing knowledge. But often video or animations or photographs, they work far more effectively, all right? So you can go to Wikipedia to learn about the history of baking, but if you want to learn how to bake a cake, you probably want to go to YouTube. So consider the lesson of Wikipedia and think about how you might apply it to your own organizations, all right? Can you improve the effectiveness of your own organization by developing a strong knowledge pooling and knowledge sharing strategy? Because those are the challenges facing the organizations of the 21st century in both the commercial and the public sectors of the economy. Now, we have tools that allow us to improve our effectiveness, that allow you to hyper-empower your organization. First, you need to develop the tools that provide hyper-connectivity within that organization. Once you've got that hyper-connectivity, you use it to pool the knowledge and expertise resources so that everyone has access to them. In some sense, it could be just as simple as Twitter plus a wiki. Just those two pieces thrown together would create a revolution in any organization. But when you start adding rich media, when you start capturing everything that can't easily be found in text, then you start building up a reservoir of expertise which turbocharges the organization and provides a rocket ship ride into empowerment. So, today you're going to learn an awful lot about all sorts of nifty tools for all sorts of things that you can do. But consider this. You already know how to put these tools to work. You use these tools outside the Cube Farm every single day. They haven't transformed the organization, but we're just on the cusp of that. Right now, almost anything is possible with sharing, with hyper-connectivity, with hyper-empowerment. You have the tools, and your organizations desperately need you to put those tools to work for them, because they have to be transformed within a few years' time to deal with the fact that all of us, as individuals, are hyper-connected. So it's up to you. It's up to every single one of you, all 300 of you in this room today. You have to go down to the code minds, you have to go into the design work, and you have to make this revolution happen. You can lead the way. You can empower me. You can empower all of us. Thank you.